pals of mine. I'm Julie Parker, and this is Conversation Accessories. Sometimes when something needs to get done, you need to do it yourself. Corporate radio kept playing the same playlists over and over and over ad nauseum, so the people turned to satellite and online stations. Sacramento missed its local pub rock and blues radio station, which closed down in 1992. Enter the superhero team of veteran DJs from the original Sacramento KZAP station, which launched in 1968, and that of the nonprofit Process Theater, Inc., which educates students in the creative process of music, digital media, video, multimedia, and other art forms. Meet Dennis Newhall, program director of Sacramento's KZAP, and Joe Parent, president of Process Theater, Inc.
So when word got out that KZAP was returning to the fold, as it were, my high school alma mater was all abuzz. Did you hear? I was so excited, even though most of them don't even live in the area anymore. And of course, because it's online, it's all accessible. But locally, those of us that were kind of reminded me of the excitement that was going around the Facebook and the internet as far as our high school alma mater is concerned. It kind of reminded me of the underground Wolfman Jack, the excitement that
listening on WXERB from the border late at night with your transistor radio. Yeah, I remember that.
So right now, my go-to stations locally have been El Camino High School's Kids Radio because of the diversity. You never know what song is going to be coming up, you know, from Bessie Smith to Buck Owens to the Zombies, which is great, and it's 24/7. And the other one is UC Davis, which I understand is your alma mater?
No, actually, I went to Sac State, and at the time, we had a radio station like that, too, which over a period of time morphed into Capital Public Radio. But it was student-run. And that's a free-form style of, here's 2 hours, do whatever you want, that I'm sure some people were expecting when they heard KZAP was coming back, although a small audience and a very aging audience. As much fun as that is for people with a wide taste in music, it's not very practical if you actually want to sustain. The reason those stations stay on the air is because they're supported by school budgets. Nobody has to make money. Everybody works for free, and there's budget to keep them on the air. We wanted a sustainable model, so we picked a little later version of KZAP when it still played plenty of new music, had professional announcers, and had a format. Now, the difference between what we're doing is somebody like the Eagle may play 350 songs, and we've got at least 10 times that. It's not a station where you're going to hear Buck Owens or Taylor Swift, for that matter, depending on who's on the air. We're trying to keep it within the range of a certain kind of rock music. We're trying to keep it as broadly based as possible.
But you do include blues, which is what really appeals to me.
Well, KZAP was founded at a time when there was a lot of blues in rock. I mean, in 1968, we're just hearing from Eric Clapton and the Rolling Stones and all these other bands that were playing blues-oriented music. Even the Band, which sort of took it to a mountain kind of sound, had played plenty of blues. It's always been there. People don't know what pure blues is, and we play some of that, but the fact that we're including the blues-leaning rock songs and some that are just straight blues kind of sets us aside from the corporate sound of other rock stations. And we've also taken out a lot of the egregiously corporate groups, which I'm not going to mention.
You don't have to.
It's just nice.
We all know who they are.
If they're not there, you may not remember who's not there, but you just know it's missing, and you don't miss it.
And I also like that you play tracks from classic albums that normally aren't played.
Instead of just the top songs? Well, yeah. Going deeper, too, is something that I've never understood. The way it works in radio is they'll get a bunch of people into a room, and they'll say, what do you think of this track? And they'll play 15 seconds, and then they'll play another 15 seconds. And it turns out that people will always say, ooh, I really like that one. That's one of my favorite songs. So you program a station that plays the 300 favorite songs over and over and over again. And that gets people for little 15-second bites, which play to the ratings. We wanted to see if we could get people for longer listening times, and you can't do that if you keep playing the same songs over and over. So though we play some of those top hit rock songs, we also play much deeper cuts on the albums.
Which is really cool.
And We're still looking for more. It's just that we have to do other things too, so we can't just throw them in there on a whim.
So tell me the difference between formatting required back in the day when you started at KZAP. Was that 72?
72.
Versus now. You know, how tight is the chokehold versus back then?
Well, when I started in 72, we were just coming out of Freeform where you could play whatever you wanted. But I was still at a radio station there at KZAP where there was 10,000 albums in the library, and if you couldn't find anything you wanted to play, you could bring stuff from home. But it did start to format a little where there was a box of new music and people would mark the songs that they thought were better, and it would start to narrow down a little. By 75, it was getting a little tighter, but then KSFM came into town, Earth Radio, and had a format and got rid of some of the jazz cuts and some of the fringer rock cuts, but actually had a rotation of songs. And that was kind of the beginning of when progressive rock started to become album-oriented rock, because, you know, we wanted to hold on to our audience. And there aren't that many people out there who want to hear something from every section of Tower Records.
And can we have a moment of silence for Tower Records?
Yes. That was a wonderful place. One of the things, though, that is exciting about what we're doing, I don't want to leave Joe out of this, is when we decided to do this, and we knew that, because we didn't know what form it was going to take, but then when we found that in order to get a broadcast license for a low-power FM, you had to be a nonprofit, and it had to be established. I'd worked with Joe before, and I thought, well, this might be a good relationship, because we can help kids, we can get the license, we can help teach kids about radio broadcasting, about digital media, and various other things, and also have a radio station in the community nonprofit vein that has a more professional sound to it than many do. So I called up Joe and I said, what can we do together here? And that's when we brought on Process Theater.
Now, you said you had worked with him before. What did you do before, Joe?
He did voiceover for some of the video stuff that we do. He's also now on the board of directors.
Right. We talked about a lot of things, some that we did and some that we didn't, but we worked with the Association of California School Administrators, and obviously this is the most we've worked together, but it's turning out really well, and Joe's in the midst now that we're on the air, and school's back in session, of working up some programs that are going to benefit the kids.
And it's not like we don't work on other things, because right now, after this, I want to talk to him about a project that I just received a couple of weeks ago about shooting video and going to different cities.
This is typical of the way media people work in Sacramento. I've worked for people who then turn around and work for me on my projects, and you'll see a video crew that's got five people in it, and you know them all from other projects with different directors, different producers, or maybe you've done voice work with them before, and so it's typical that we're all out there sharing in the jobs that come up or the projects that we dream up.
And that's because everybody's a professional.
Yes.
We are professionals.
Well, tell me about Process Theater.
Okay, that's
a little bit.
Process Theater started in 1982, and it started as, let me give it a little background. My degree is in music therapy.
Nice.
And my wife's degree is in music therapy. And to get my graduate degree, my master's degree in music therapy, I wrote a musical, and it had all developmentally disabled adults as the actors. It was called Fatso. And we produced it in 1977, and it was at Delta College. And we were with the Alan Short Center, Arts for the Handicapped. At the time, it was called Arts for the Handicapped. And it was Alan Short, the Short-Lanterman Act, that took the kids out of, the students out of the state hospitals and put them in centers. And we ran one of the art centers down in Stockton. So we toured the show, won a bunch of awards for it, hoped to bring it back in 2017 and put it on again. So it's one of those things where that started the whole thing rolling, and it was mostly live theater that we did, and we always still did niche live theater. We produced 70 Girls 70, which had all actors over the age of 60.
I bet that was a blast.
It was.
And probably a lot of characters coming through there.
Yeah, because they're all older actors in town who did live theater, and they all came together, and they were just like this big giant family. And we did it at Sierra too, because that's where we had, ironically, that's where we had our office. Upstairs in Sierra too, and we did it there at the theater there, and we had a 92-year-old stand-up comic in between during intermission, and literally he would stand. I mean, he was good. He was 92, and he'd stand. He told all these old jokes.
as old as he was.
Yeah, and what he did was, we were young, we were in our 40s, 30s. He took my wife on stage, and he did like a Gracie Allen kind of thing with
her.
Oh,
fun.
It was really a kick. I mean, what we did was because it was especially the afternoon shows, because they were senior citizens coming to this show. It was a niche show. And then we had funding from AT&T, and we had funding from whatever it was called at the time. In the government, they had a thing for seniors, and they were funding the show, helping fund the show. And so we would do things like that. I wrote another musical that we're hoping to bring back next spring. So I was doing all the writing and all the directing and the producing. And so it became the nonprofit corporation to be able to raise funds to do these things. Then we got into the digital world, and we got into the video world. And we got into the video world because the San Juan Unified School District came to us and said, just like these guys come to us and say, want to do something crazy? And I say, yes. And we put a studio together in San Juan Unified School District at the San Juan High School. It was 1991. This cable company gave us $150,000 to put a studio together. And we did a microwave direct signal to Sac State, and then they put us on the cable channel, and we did 6 hours a day live.
And this was 25 years ago, so this was pretty cutting edge for them.
Yeah, and it was on cable, and it was high school, all high school kids. This brings us up to today, because they were really worried about the kids, because these were our sweat hogs, that if you know the Mr. Kate,
yes.
they were the sweat hogs, and they didn't know what to do with these kids. They were underserved. On one spectrum, they were crazy kids who couldn't sit still in a class, and then there were these kids that didn't want to do anything at all, and they'd all come to the class. The only way they can come to that class is if they did their 3 hours in the morning, then they could come to the class in the afternoon, and they'd never leave. And the superintendent would hang out, and he had his own show, a monthly show. And so it started building like that, but the goal was to keep those kids involved and engaged. So which brings us to now, I'm on the board of the, well, Process Theater's on the board of the Sacramento Educational Cable Consortium. And we've been putting in small studios, TV studios, green screen studios in schools. And they're underserved schools. So like we have one in Luther Burbank we just built. We're building one in Rosemont High School. We did one at Robla Elementary School. And so we put those in, and the engineer puts them in. And so what happens then is that there's no curriculum development, like KYDS has no curriculum development, and they're worried about KYDS. I mean, there's songs and things going on there, but there's no curriculum development. There's a few kids that really want to do it, and then there's a problem with the radio station and curriculum.
It's a toy other than an educational
right.
opportunity.
Well, because I thought that the reason for the diverse song selection is so they would be exposed to different types of music.
It's backwards. The kids are exposing everybody to the music they like. It's not a case where, like, what's his name was talking about, this guy?
Dennis?
Yeah, Dennis.
Thanks.
It's not a case like that. These guys that are the DJs for this whole KZAP phenomenon, they know music. I listen to it all the time, and I go, that song goes perfect with that next song. That song's perfect. I even told the people at the Sacramento Educational Cable Consortium that we're bringing back KZAP. There's one guy down in Center High School, and he says, if I go like this, I get it. If I go like this, I don't get it. And it was like he had his, so I stay like this. And he says, he's an older fella, and he said he listened to KZAP all the time, and he's listening to it again. And when he can't get it on there, he gets it online, and he's the director of technology at Center Unified. It's that kind of a thing. When I told them this, they were saying that it's great to have it back. And I said, there's an art to this. This is not just, it's great to have it back, and these people are playing the songs that they want to play. There's probably, and I oversold it, I said, there's probably 500 and 600 years of experience if you add it all up.
One thing,
dog ears?
When you talk about playing,
ears.
When you talk about playing what you want to play, I have to tell a lot of people who don't realize this. KZAP went on the air in November 1968, and it was kids barely out of high school, mostly, playing whatever the hell they wanted. They were hired because they knew music. But again, when you're talking about you're 19, you're being hired by a 23-year-old, there's not a lot of experience going in there. It's just like, yeah, you can be fine, you know, whether you have a good voice or not. And it was that way, underground, freeform, whatever you want to call it, for about 3 years before some sort of order started to come into it. What people don't understand, it was owned by a millionaire. It was not self-sustaining. It was really cool, and for people who like music, it was great to hear, but it was of its time and hard to sustain. I wish things like that could still be around and there was a vast audience that wanted to hear the vast music that was being played, but it was not a business model that could last, and therefore it didn't. And as I said, the same with the schools. The reason kids can come in and play what they want is because they don't make any money, and the school pays the bill for the electricity. Hooking up with Process Theater, besides being a legal requirement for the FM license, also had other advantages in that by being nonprofit, we have more revenue streams than a commercial station because we can get donations, fundraisers, grants. And we also can ask people to work pro bono for free to help us do this thing because it's benefiting part of the community. Everybody that's on the air is happy with that. They're not, it's very efficient. We don't take up any more of their time than we need to, and they're all having fun doing it. But we are also very efficient with our money, as you can imagine. Putting this on the air was only in the tens of thousands of dollars, whereas a big station in a chain in Sacramento, some of them have sold for north of $35 million at a time when stations were valued at more. And now they're looking around and saying, we paid $35 million for that signal, and we can't get that even if we tried to sell it tomorrow. So commercial radio is kind of they're in dire straits in some ways financially because they owe so much on this debt service, and they have to have offices and all this other stuff that takes money every month. And we're trying to put out a good product without having to do all that big boy stuff that really doesn't pay off.
And using the 21st century digital media at our disposal, it's not like the days where you go into a studio. And so this has to be taught to kids as well.
Hardly anybody sits and watches records spin around anymore, or CDs or anything. There's usually not somebody that's sitting there between announcements while the music is playing, doing nothing. We're the same. You know, we don't sit in the studio and play a big pile of CDs in a row.
You're working from home and...
Yeah, it's a whole different setup. It's kind of virtual the way it works, but it sounds great to me. I'm amazed that we can do it, that it sounds like a radio station of old, but without all the expense.
So how did you approach the logistics of that? What kind of software and how did you begin to find...
It was a three-year process. When Tom Cale and I started talking about going after a low-power FM license, this was 3 years ago, when they said that in a year we will open the window for that. We did our research to find out what we needed to do, whether we needed a studio, whether we had to all be in the same room at one time. And we were looking at the FCC regulations, which didn't require any of that. And then we started looking around for software that would bring all this together, the voices from different places and the music and everything else. And we found it in New Zealand.
Really?
But there were other things that we tried out over the course of those 2.5 years before we were ready to launch that make what we're doing, we think, if not unique, pretty close to it. Since we went on the air, we've gotten calls from radio station owners, from ex-employees of big stations in big markets who have had kind of a groundswell of support over the years the same way KZAP did, that bring back this station that was like KZAP or this one. And so we are talking to some people who may or may not want to do the same thing that we did. We'd like to share our information with them, but we'd also like to benefit from the hard work we did for 2.5 years.
That's what I was thinking. Sell a template.
It's amazing, especially if you can do it in a big market without an FM broadcast, an FCC broadcast. If you can do it just online, which I think is the future of, quote, radio, unquote, anyway, it's not that expensive.
One of the problems with just relying on online is that people love listening to their phones, but not everybody has unlimited data. So you can't listen to it 24/7 unless you're sitting in front of your computer or at home listening to the actual radio, which I think is the appeal of having a local radio station, is they don't need to be online.
You'd be surprised, and we have this on our website, you'd be surprised how little data the apps take. Now, if you listen on the browser and the regular player on your phone, it's more, but the apps don't take up that much data. This reminds me, back in the day, in 1972, when I was working at KZAP, it had been on the air for 3.5 years, and we were still begging people to run out and buy FM converters so they could hear us in their cars. People still didn't have FM stereos in their houses. You know, it was hard to get us, but people made an effort. Now, the great majority of people have a tuner in their pocket. What they don't realize is that they're either devices or simple $5 cables that will connect that to their car stereo or their home stereo, and you can listen just like you had a radio.
That's on phones that haven't been purchased through, say, Verizon, who have their own little robotic software in there that prevent you from using that. I read recently about that, and I checked. And
you're talking about the FM chip?
To pick up signals on your phone, generally.
Well, I'm not talking about signals. I'm talking about streaming and then connecting it to your stereo so that the stream comes through a better quality speaker system.
The aux plug
into your stereo, and there's a cord. There's a $5 cable that plugs into the headphone port of your phone, and then it's got regular RCA jacks on the other side that go into your stereo, and you tune it in, and, you know, this little guy here gets KZAP wherever you are plugged into your stereo. Also into some car stereos, and, of course, this year all the major manufacturers are putting Wi-Fi in their cars. And they'll offer data plans where it's not that expensive. But this little guy here, this iPhone, is a tuner, and this is the out. And there's two in jacks in the back of my stereo. I was kind of an epiphanous moment when I figured that out a couple years ago, that I could listen to streaming stations on my stereo instead of on either headphones or the little speaker in the iPhone.
Unfortunately, I have a 05 Camry.
And I have an 06 Corolla, and it doesn't have that aux plug.
Yeah, we don't have that aux.
But the thing, too, that's coming down, and it's a new thing. There's a chip in every one of those phones that's an FM chip.
That's what I meant earlier. I'm sorry, I got confused. The FM chip.
The FM chip
is blocked.
It's blocked
by Verizon and these big companies. If you buy your phone through them.
But the FCC is now wanting everybody to unblock them. And one of the things we needed for
I didn't know that. Tell me more.
The 93.3, we had to get the EAS.
Right.
So what's happening is, if the power goes out on those phones, and there's battery power in your phone, you should be able to get the emergency broadcast through your phone. And right now you can't do that. And so what the FCC is, and I heard this on an NPR thing, what the FCC is doing is going in and telling all of the providers, you have to release that chip. Now, they had the chip in the old Nano phone, the Nano iPod, and it's the only one right now. The iPod Touch still has it, but it's off. Apple took it off, turns it off, but it's still there. But they didn't turn it off on the old Nano, and I can get all the FM stations on the Nano. That's big like that. But that's the problem. The reason is because of safety, not because you can pick up radio stations on your
phone. That'll be aside.
The thing is, that's true. What happens is the providers don't want you to use, like, go downtown and listen to KZAP on 93.3.
Because then you're off the phone.
Because you're off the phone,
yeah.
And you're off the data.
Right.
Exactly.
I want to back up, though. There are several gizmos that take your phone, you plug it in, and it broadcasts the stream that's coming into your phone to your car stereo a foot away, 2 feet away. We have one online that shows, it's from Crane Company. I think they're about $50, but there's cheaper ones out there, too. So if you don't have the aux in, you can do it by broadcasting our stream with this little gadget.
So you're broadcasting an FM signal?
A signal into your FM radio. So there's absolutely no excuse for not hearing us wherever you are. In fact, the day we went on the air, we had a listener in Borneo.
Nice.
And I was in Vienna. And I opened up my iPad. It was FM in the bar, and I opened it up, iPad, and I said to the guys, I just played it, and the guy goes, the guy can't speak any English, and he says, Tom Petty. he knew Tom Petty, but he couldn't speak another word of English.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm driving downtown, and I remembered, oh yeah, Kazo's back on, and I hear Nathaniel...
Ratcliffe.
Son of a bitch! Don't give me a drink! I love this station!
Well, you know, that's really the fun part. For me, that's really the fun part, is taking rock music and moving it forward again. Because KZAP, in its entirety, for the 23 years it was on, always played new music. It didn't stop. But classic rock stops at about 85. And it's, oh, sorry. So in that time, the ensuing 25 years, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers have put out some amazing albums. Bob Dylan has had a string of great albums. Bob Seger's latest album is great. You know, all these records have come and gone, and there has been nobody to play them in town. Not to mention all of the new artists. But a few years ago, when we started thinking about this, we were hearing from Mumford & Sons and the Alabama Shakes. And now that we're looking harder, we find the Nathaniel Ratcliffe's and ex-ambassadors and Calexico and all these people we hadn't heard of, and we put them on the air. They're new, just like Tom Petty was at one time on KZAP. You know, we got Graham Parker coming into town, just like Graham Parker was. So there's new people that are taking their place as new people playing rock music. They're not all doing rap, and they're not all doing pop tunes, and they're not all doing country. There are rockers out there who have been totally ignored.
Well, I heard recently that Joe Ely's coming to town. Oh, my God, I haven't heard Joe Ely in years.
Yeah, Joe's probably a little bit outside of our sound, but yeah, Joe's he's a road warrior. But there are a lot of bands coming to town that either new or heritage bands that we're really happy to play their new records, and nobody else is.
I was wondering, because you have been in the business for so long, I mean, the contacts, connections that you have, once the word gets out, like, here's a venue for the music to be heard. I mean,
I don't know that we've had that much. This is kind of a nice coincidence. I don't know that we've had that much of an effect yet, because I can't say that we're the powerhouse in town, nor will we ever be. But there are three locally based promoters and a few others that are regionally based that have been pushing for developing venues. That's always been a problem with Sacramento, is we don't have the venues, which is why you see shows in Grass Valley and Mondavi Center and even the Harris Center in Folsom that you have to drive to see. Well, now the Harris Center is certainly within part of the big population bulge in Sacramento, but Harlow's has stepped up. There's the Ace of Spades. There's the 24th Street Theater. And they're starting to pick off these bands that are, I think, well, a lot of the shows are being pretty successful. They're of interest to people in the original KZAP demographic, but also we're starting to see some shows come in from some of the younger bands. It'll be interesting to see what happens when a band like Nathaniel Radcliffe decides maybe to come through town, whether it gets a response, whether enough people have heard it on Sacramento's KZAP to say, I want to buy tickets for that.
Well, that's what I meant when I said venue earlier. I meant radio venue. When the music companies, the artists themselves, when they hear that here's a venue for their music to be heard, those portals are going to get wider and wider, and they're going to multiply.
Right now, we're being called up and bothered by promotional people is fun and not fun.
Yeah, there's always used car salesmen.
And it's different than it used to be. It's a little more corporate, a little more desperate, for that matter. What we've been doing, because of the internet and the access to song samples, is we've been looking for stuff ourselves that we think will work within blues, within singer-songwriters, within rock. And some of the stuff we're playing, I don't know that anybody else is ever going to play it, but we thought, this is great, let's put it on for a few weeks. I think people will like this. That's the old days of radio. That's what died when the corporations took over and said, how can we monetize this? How can we use the music to fill in between our commercial sales instead of the other way, which used to be, how can we sell commercials to make sure we can still play the music?
So how do you approach the research for the samples out there? Do you have, like, favorite go-to places? Or?
Research?
Yeah.
You mean our research or broad research?
Your research.
Oh, yeah, there's go-to places. I mean, you know, there are places that make available just about anything that's new, and there's also iTunes and there's Amazon. I mean, it's pretty easy to look around and see what's new and what's on the horizon.
But outside of that, you have independent artists that maybe haven't been able to get a gig or post. Or
and, yeah, but with the internet and YouTube and various, things start buzzing. I mean, we don't claim that we go through 1,000 budding young homemade artists a week and find the best out of them. We can't do that. So it's like everybody, you sort of wait and see what is starting to come to the top.
I understand that you plan to highlight local artists with live events as part of your
program. That's not the easiest thing to do, and right now we're sort of catching our breath from the launch and trying to start building again, but we would like to have a more, and once we get working with Process Theater and the school studios are set up and things like that, then that might be more possible. We're going to need some student labor. We're going to need those studios. But, I mean, I would love to have good professional locally based bands playing in a series. We used to do that at Croy when I was there back in the 80s, and it was one of my favorite things, doing a live broadcast with music that was happening right then instead of, you know,
and that's a month ago. That's one of the pieces of it, too, because we have the access to the cable channels. And we can do live on the cable as well as live on the air.
So we can tell people you can hear it here, but you can also see it on cable. Or you
visual
can,
feeds.
Yeah.
And because we have that capability to go to any of the high schools and grade schools that we're putting these studios in, we are wired. Sacramento Educational Cable Consortium has a thing called BestNet, and we are wired from the university down to the county office, and every single school is wired with a 30 gig port, and nobody else in the country is doing it. like we're doing it. So like a good example is we're looking at maybe putting a studio in a school that has a really good music department, and they also have a nice video department, and they have a brand new theater. I mean, things like that where you have everything all in one spot. But the point of it is that that school has a problem. It's a Sac City Unified School District school that has a problem with dropouts. And so when we put the TV studio in, they had more kids not drop out. And then maybe with the radio studio, there's even more kids that drop out. In fact, Mary Kay and I were talking about that on Friday. Instead of the pathways, maybe to talk more about what this is doing for kids to stay in school.
Give me a line to talk about.
Yeah.
It could get big. I must remind anybody who's listening that this whole thing is being put together by people who must otherwise support themselves. And so, you know, when I go home, I spend a lot of time on KZAP, but I also have to do things to pay my bills, as does everybody else that you hear on KZAP and Joe and everybody. So we would love to do a lot of things, but what we're going to need before we do that is to finally convince people that it's worth getting some corporate money, some donations, some support, so that we can actually pull these things off.
So what suggestions would you have?
Well, donations to us are tax deductible, and Process Theater has a long running reputation, so anybody could get a hold of us and say, hey, you know, I like this idea of live concerts. I like this idea of video concerts. How do we do that? Things like that aren't cheap, but they're doable, and they're great for the community. That's probably the key. We're certainly not doing this so we can walk away as rich promoters, but in the end result, we might be able to spend some of our time doing it and have enough money to pull it off and do it right.
And from our point of view, the three prongs that we're looking at is the because we're the nonprofit corporation, we could be the fiscal receiver from people who could write off this as a tax deduction. So if it's a business or if it's I've talked to some people that have said that to me. They said, well, is it a write-off? I mean, or is this a business thing? I said, it's a write-off. It's a total write-off. I mean, you're not getting anything except a wonderful experience of being supporting the radio station. So that's the one prong. So we're like a fiscal receiver for the radio station. And anything that's fiscally received for the radio station stays with the radio station. So to build that up, so that we still have that professional level that the kids could see and understand that that's where they want to be. They want to be in an industry standard level. Whatever they do, whether they're doing a voiceover for a video that they're doing, they have to know how that works. So the second prong is to work with the kids, and they have something to listen to and say, you see how that's going together, you know how that's going together. And then all that talent, the third one is all that talent that's out there is to get them to be the consultants with us. So because we have the digital media, if the DJ is in Portland, Oregon, there's no reason why we can't get on online with a product called Zoom, where they come on the screen and I put it on in the classroom, the teacher puts it in the classroom and talks to these DJs about what songs they're playing and why they're playing them and how they're doing this and what they do in their lives. What happened in that gap between the time when KZAP went off?
92.
And then KZAP's back. So like there's 23 years in there. So something happened with this talent in 23 years. So there's 23 years times 10. So there's another factor. And it's not a case where we have to have people come into the classroom anymore. They come in virtually. And so they could be where they are now and they can be doing their show
right.
while they're on camera with their computer and showing the kids how they're doing the show from Kona, and then what songs they're playing, and how do they know they're having these songs? Well, they have a Google Doc that they're looking at, and just like you do in classroom. This is how we do ours. This is how they do theirs. It's like a digital media lesson to get to a professional level, and it's all 21st century school stuff. And then if you put it all together, it's saleable to the schools because it works with the Common Core standards in the schools. Every one of the Common Core standards say that each kid could assess what they're doing or say what they need to say as far as I learned this. They use the media. They use video, they use audio tracks, they use PowerPoint presentations, and they use a combination of all of them. and they get credit. So right now, there's a TV studio that's separate from the school, and the kids go after school to go play in this TV studio. There's a radio station or the radio program that's after school or in the school, and they go to do that to play, as opposed to integrating it into the whole program. And what they do is they learn how to do interviews, and they go out and interview very virtually or not virtually, but they're using all that technology, and that's what the Common Core standards are saying. Use the technology, use 21st century skills that have to be built up. So when you get to college, when I have my students at Sac State, a lot of those guys had high school, were in high school or in a community college, and they're ready.
I produce audio and video for a living, so does Joe. But I have no delusions that I'm going to be better than these kids. They all grew up with cameras in their hands, you know. They know media from way younger, at least a different way than I did. So I'm looking forward to when we can have a handpicked staff of the students that are capable to produce an entire video series of live music. I mean, we hope to get there. Whether we do depends partly on community involvement and support. But if the kids could do that, if it's a band, I don't care if it's a bunch of 80-year-old bluegrass players, but the staff around them with the cameras and the microphones and the lighting are all kids learning, well, maybe there's going to be a blip or two because these kids have never actually worked in the real world. But by having a series like that, they're going to get much closer to being ready to work in the real world. And that's why working with Joe and Process Theater and eventually the schools is exciting for us, because we're over here doing this radio thing, and we're going to keep doing that. But if we can expand it a little bit, and he can expand what he's doing, where it meets in the middle for me is really exciting.
And that's the new audience. That's your new audience.
That's our new audience.
Right? And that's when you have 85-year-old people on stage rocking out. That's great.
Yeah.
But when you have a rock band in a school that's on cable, and they warm up for that 80-year-old
right.
person that we put on, then that's cool.
And that's what's going to get people that the friends of the 19-year-olds that are doing the production and the parents of the friends and the business partners of the parents and all that, they're all going to get interested too because we're doing this new thing.
Well, speaking of 80-year-olds, my father turned 80 this year, and he worked behind the scenes at Kroy in the mid-50s.
Wow.
And so he remembers the DJs, the Caro Wise Guys.
Well,
Caro, why not?
I got to show you some stuff before you leave, too.
But the DJs had personalities and had fun with what they were
doing. And that's what I said to the people at SECC. I said to them, I just slipped. I said, DJ, they're not DJs. DJs are the ones at the weddings. These are on-air personalities.
Well, I got to tell you something.
Too many syllables.
I got to tell you something, though. The DJs that were on the air in the 50s and 60s had a certain stylized presentation, and there was a lot of trying to be fun and entertaining to us baby boomers. The whole freeform underground movement was to get away from that and just play the music and talk about the music, which is what KZAP tended to be for a long time. Then, with the advent of corporate radio, it was decided, it certainly didn't suit me, but it was decided that morning zoos and Opie and Andy or whoever they are, that those guys, that's what we needed in the morning. And that was one of the things that turned me off.
Yeah, me too.
So the group of us who started KZAP, especially Tom Cale, Diane Michaels, and me, we wanted to get back to where, yeah, you talk, and maybe there's a little bit of goofing around, but for the most part, you're not there to be a B-rated comedian. You're there to play the music, talk about the music, and then move on. And
don't talk over the music.
Even though we may...
Oh, God, that's so annoying.
Don't talk over the music.
Even though we may and may be and may have personalities, that's not the focus. It's more about, let's get this music out there. To that, Sacramento's KZAP plays probably 54 to 56 minutes of music an hour. And when we're not playing music, by law, we can only do live underwriting. We can't do any kind of recorded commercial or anything. So we have a much more organic sound. Whereas commercial radios push the 25-minute an hour of commercial limit. And they also play a lot of screaming car spots. Now, I love screaming car spots. I've done plenty myself. But we don't play any of those. So it's a whole different sound. It will continue to be a different sound. And it's more about the music and less about the personalities and the advertisers.
And no Kelly Clarkson.
No Kelly Clarkson. Sorry, Kelly.
Where do you keep all this music? I realize everything's digital, but they're also talking about the big cables that are storing data. We may have a problem in another 20 years or so.
Well, our library is on server, but that's the case with just about any radio station these days. I mean, the nice thing about that is it's not going to skip. It's not going to crackle. It's not going to seize up. They tend to be very reliable. But as I said, almost every station, that's where your music is.
And nothing's going to fall on the turntable.
And it, yeah. And
well,
it used to
make it a little more interesting.
It used to be that the library might be on a server in the back room, or it might be on a computer in the front room or whatever. Now it's on servers that have backups, so theoretically you won't lose it. Unless we get the big magnetic pulse and everything goes down and we're back to cooking on the stove and reading to each other.
Having to use a piece of paper and pencil.
Right, and then all we'll need is electricity, and we can have Sacramento's KZAP, although that'll take a little rewiring.
I just think back on the days of high school when we were so excited to have that DJ sitting in the cafeteria during lunch hour. Come a long way, baby.
Again, we started because of the technology and the fact that we thought Sacramento needed this.
And I'm sure you heard from a lot of people that told you that Sacramento needed it.
Not until we launched, because we kept it a secret for 2.5 years.
There wasn't any rumblings behind the scenes, like, hey.
A few people knew that we were doing this, but a lot of people just knew that, well, if you're bringing back KZAP, I'm interested. Now, again, the KZAP of 68 and the KZAP of 92 were different radio stations, and we picked a period when we thought it was the most accessible, the most successful, without being the most sellout or the most eclectic. So I'll admit, we are not the KZAP of November 8th, 1968, nor do I think that would ever fly again outside of a college station.
Can only imagine that right now all of you DJs are happier than hell that you get to play it the way that it should be played.
That's why everybody's willing to do it for free. Everybody's
having
a good time.
Donating their time. Yeah.
We tune in and hear it and we think, man, that works pretty well. That's just like the old days, but it's not.
And how many do you have in the lineup now? You have quite a list.
Well, there's 7 full-timers and I've got 5 part-timers.
Are they all from KZAP, or do you have a little bit of...
Everybody has spent some time at KZAP, with the exception of 2 of the part-timers. Well, Scott Forrington never did, but he worked for me at Croy, and he worked at Air America. And he's great. He's absolutely great. He's on weekends, and he's really an entertaining, energetic guy. And John Norman never was on KZAP, but he's been around radio in Sacramento for a long time. But everybody else spent some time, even some of them very briefly, everybody else spent some time at KZAP.
So
I think one of the problems, too, is with the internet and digital media. You're accessible. Go online. I'll get up somebody online who decided that they wanted to send an email to us about their greatest idea for the nonprofit, mm-hmm. for a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the greatest idea. It was the worst idea that I ever heard, and I'm not going to go into it.
The greatest of the worst?
It was the worst idea. Obviously, the person never had a nonprofit or never worked with a nonprofit. They have no idea what it is, but they think this is going to be the greatest ever. And they didn't want to tell me yet because somebody's going to steal it. And so, like, 5 emails later, we finally figured it out what that person wanted to do. And I write back and I go, this is the worst idea I ever
had. We did not tell him that, though. We were much more.
Ixnay on the idea.
We were more diplomatic.
Yeah, you wrote the email to him.
Yeah.
And but I told him, I said, this is the worst idea I have ever heard. We would do a crawfish broil before we do.
That's another thing about this. A whole new part of radio that wasn't there before is social media. And so the Sacramento's KZAP Facebook page is important. And as I sit and watch it, it's also frustrating that I can't just call those people up right away and say, no, it's easy to get us online, you know, or here's how you find us, and no, we're sorry, we can't just turn up the power. You know, all these things that people don't know. Why would they? How would they? They just think, well, how come you guys are so weak? Just turn it up. Well, we could do that if we wanted to get thrown in prison.
It's like Spinal Tap. We want to turn up to
11. 11, yeah. But if we wanted to get arrested, lose our license, you just can't.
Well, the other one was when the big poster, right? And they said, where are you on the dial? Well, it's 93, right there.
I will say, too, in case people don't understand, the whole low power FM, which is the only reason we could have done this with a radio station, was established by Congress several years back when it came to their attention that a lot of people felt that radio had been sucked dry of any community involvement or any soul by the corporations. And so they finally said, well, here's what we can do for you. We can find these little holes in between all of the big strong signals where you won't interfere. or the interference will be negligible. Well, those little holes don't go very far. So you got a station that'll broadcast 50 miles on the left and one on the right that'll broadcast 50 miles. And in between, there's a 3-mile radius where they don't meet. Well, you can put a radio station there and it can only go 3 miles. That's where we are, is we can't make it stronger. There's a lot of electronic stuff and other companies involved and other radio stations that don't want us to do anything. So that's why the FM is as small as it is. But I will say, I really believe in a few years that the FCC is going to knock on the doors of those big corporations and say, look, you got 10 stations in this market. 2 of them aren't doing very well. We want those because Verizon and AT&T need the bandwidth.
That makes sense.
They'll still be broadcasting, but I don't think we need as many radio stations, which are struggling now, while AT&T and Verizon keep getting more customers and can't find a place to put the traffic.
Hmm. On a final note, I want to emphasize that KZAP, the KZAP, was taken by Chico. So to listen to the original KZAP people, Sacramento KZAP?
Sacramento's KZAP. Yes, that's another reason why we don't say KZAP. That's an FCC thing. I mean, only one station can have those call letters. And we don't call ourselves that online or anything, but we can call ourselves KZAP because I could call myself anything. I could call, there's a jack and a eagle and a wolf and all that stuff. Well, so KZAP is something, and we actually have a trademark on it.
And the cat, of course.
And the cat, which we have permission to use, too, which was a icon of those bumper stickers, which we're going to reproduce.
And people still have the originals.
And they still, I've said many times, those outlast a lot of the cars they were put on. So we're close to having stickers again.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I got a 40-year class reunion coming up. easily, through the crowd. Well, I just, on behalf of my listeners that are local and online newbies, thank you.
Well, thank you, and pass the word. We'd love to grow virally and let people know we exist.
Oh, I am, believe me. And I'm going to be posting the link to this podcast on my high school page so they can all listen to this interview and hear more and be more jealous.
Foo Fighters, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Dan Hicks and Hot Licks, John Lee Hooker. I mean, seriously, it's the best local radio station. And students learning about digital media and the ongoing history of music ain't no small thing. Do something different. Create a playlist of your grandparents' favorite songs from when they were younger and play it for the grandkids.